website at wordsandculture.ca, where you can find language apps and start your own language journey. See you next time on Words and Culture. I'm Michael Hutchinson. Be well, keep smiling.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e. Ninen yuji hina.
Ekose.
Kakawutau. We'll see you again.
This is Bird Note. Many of our birds can be found in ecotones, the borders between two habitats, like indigo buntings, which breed in the ecotone between forest and meadow. They use resources available in either habitat. Indigo buntings are common in Musketetuck National Wildlife Refuge in Indiana. There, grassland and forest are interspersed to produce superb wildlife habitat. The buntings feed on the ground and nest in shrubs or weedy fields. The males find perfect places for singing from elevated perches at the forest edge. Female buntings know what they like, and arriving from Mexico and Central America, they search for just such an ecotone. With the right balance of forest and meadow, this beautiful bird will continue to thrive. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note celebrates the everyday actions of our listeners and the work of our conservation partners to reverse the alarming decline in North American birds. Together, we can bring them back. Learn more and get involved at birdnote.org.
The Reach Gallery Museum Abbotsford is marking National Indigenous History Month, that's June, with another handful of Luminous Waters performances, puppet shows, put on yearly since 2020 by the museum, this year featuring student performers from Asia. That's the Abbotsford School of Integrated Arts, Sumas Mountain.
I'm Andrea Orlowski, and I'm the Curator of Learning and Community Engagement at The Reach.
The show tells the story of Sumath Hutsa, or Sumas Lake, before it was drained a century ago.
The performances kind of bring to life the animals that would be living in and around. And throughout the performance, we have three giant illuminated puppets. We have Mike the mink, Barb the sturgeon, and Harry the heron.
The performance is based on the children's book written by museum staff alongside Stalo collaborators and published by The Reach.
Samath Khatza, Stalamakwesh Khatza, Great Grandma's Lake, story by Satach, Chris Silver, Homantalot, Carrie Lynn Victor, Chris Folds, and Laura Schneider. Illustrations by Homantalot, Carrie Lynn Victor.
The clip borrowed from the museum's 2021 YouTube video telling this story.
At the very beginning of the performance, the book is gone through and read, and so students and participants are able to kind of see that whole story play out of the little boy learning from his elder about the history of the lake and its importance to the indigenous community.
Orlowski says there are three dates that interested folks can keep in mind.
On June 1st, the puppets will be at the Vancouver Children's Festival. They'll be roaming through the festival grounds. And then we have two dates of performances the first week of June. June 3rd at 7 p.m. at Matsqui Centennial Auditorium. And then the performances on June 5th, those are open specifically to school groups.
Orlowski says teachers who would like to bring their class can sign up by contacting The Reach for more information.
It's free for teachers to bring their students. That's covered and supported by Indigenous Education.
Orlowski says she hopes to see you there.
Such a special evening and performance, and the students at Asia Sumas Mountain have really worked hard we would absolutely encourage you to go to our website, thereach.ca. You can look under the programs and events section and find information about Luminous Waters.
For Civil Radio, I'm Mike McCullough. This story was made possible by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. For this story and more, visit frequencynews.ca.
For 80 years, the Union Gospel Mission in the downtown Eastside has provided services and resources to those wishing to rebuild their lives. This summer, as the homeless count continues to rise dramatically, UGM estimates that participation in the upcoming free annual event, Summer Connect, will increase 50% to an estimated 3,000 people. To find out more about this event, CFRO talked with Sarah Chu from UGM. Sarah, can you tell us about the Union Gospel Mission?
So we are an organization. We've had over 80 years under our belt of really helping and encouraging the community in the downtown Eastside that deals with poverty, addiction, and homelessness. Our goal is to really transform one life at a time, whether it's through a meal, whether it's by providing clothing, emergency supplies, housing, as well as whatever they need to get by. And we also have recovery programs as well. And, you know, throughout these past 80 plus years, we've really spread from just the downtown Eastside to being really all over different locations in Metro Vancouver and the Fraser Valley, and just making these resources for people going through poverty, homelessness, and addiction accessible. We're just for people.
And you have an event that happens annually called the Summer Connect. What is that?
Okay, so Summer Connect is a one-stop shop for people in the downtown Eastside to connect with service providers, the community, and UGM. So we shut down Princess Street from East Hastings to Cordova for one day, and we have 30 over service providers with booths ready to assist anyone who approaches them. So that means people will be able to get their taxes filed, potentially receive benefits that could help them if they're going through poverty. They can find employment through service providers. We have Embers Eastside Works that is coming. They can seek free or assisted legal aid. They can potentially find housing because we'll be there on site. They can get their bike fixed, which can be really a huge step for someone who really relies on biking to get groceries to doctor's appointments. They can get a free haircut, feel empowered that way, and then they can learn about more about UGM and our addiction recovery program. So over 30 service providers ready to help anyone in a range of services and just make them feel well connected to the community that they're living in, as well as the people who are so ready to help them as well.
And it's free for people to attend?
Yes, it's free for people to attend. We'll also have free meals on the day. We'll have live entertainment, raffle prizes. So it's quite like a fun, low barrier environment. You can get, you know, the different services you need, but you can also just come and get a free meal and talk to people, socialize, and enjoy, hopefully, good weather on the day of.
Yeah. And it's an annual event. How many years has it been going?
It is an annual event. So it's been going on since 2011. So when it was originally created, it had the same goal as now, really to eliminate barriers that prevent people who are going through things like homelessness, poverty, or addiction from moving forward in life. So we run the event annually, except during the pandemic. And because we keep seeing the benefit of it, we continue running it.
Is there anything new that's happening in this event from previous years?
But I think the number of people that we anticipate serving is going to be larger in this event than ever before. You know from statistics that there are nearly 5,000 people experiencing homelessness, and that number continues to grow in Metro Vancouver. And so with many people being affected by poverty as well, we anticipate potentially 3,000 folks coming out for this one-day event.
And it's being held on Princess Street between Cordova and Hastings. What day will it be happening?
Sure, it'll be June 12th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m.
That was Sarah Chu from the Union Gospel Mission chatting with us about their upcoming annual Summer Connect Fair. This is Bernadine Fox reporting for The Pulse at Vancouver Co-op Radio and frequencynews.ca with funding by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program of the Department of Canadian Heritage, and distributed by the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Greetings, netizens. Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for Bitcoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.
This is a CHY News update. Vancouver Island University Students Union has had to take steps to hold the university accountable for the measures they have placed in response to the VIU Palestine Solidarity Encampment. VIUSU advocates for students' rights to protest at Vancouver Island University. The encampment started on May 1st as a demonstration in solidarity with the Palestinian people and demanded action from the university administration regarding the conflict. On May 2nd, VIU notified those staying at the encampment that students may face suspension, expulsion, or be prohibited from graduation and convocation celebrations if the encampment stays. The university also changed the hours of access for the library, which is normally open 24/7, to only be open from 9 a.m. to midnight. During the time the library was open, it was only accessible by student or employee ID. In an email obtained by CHOY, sent from University Relations to VIU employees on May 2nd, the email noted that security personnel would be monitoring building access on campus and, quote, may request photo ID in addition to student and employee ID. End quote. These actions VIUSU say are lockdown measures and spark concern regarding students' rights and freedom of expression. James Bowen is the executive director of the Students' Union. He says the same day the measures were put in place, VIUSU sent an email to the administration stating that they thought the measures put in place were an overreach.
Our position is that they have a right to protest and that the university needs to respect that right. And that the measures of the university shows that they didn't respect that right, and in doing so affected the rights of all students and staff on campus in a negative way.
In light of the measures still being in place on May 3rd and concerns about how they can impact students' rights and freedoms, Bowen says VIUSU reached out to the British Columbia Federation of Students. The BCFS is an alliance of students' unions representing 14 colleges, universities, and institutions across BC.
Because our position is that VIU's lockdown sets a precedent for the province, which it should not. And so something needs to be done to ensure that this isn't a precedent-setting event.
On May 7th, VIUSU's chairperson, Sarah May Leanna, sent a letter to the BC Minister of Post-Secondary Education and Future Skills, Lisa Baer, along with the VIU Senior Administration and Board of Governors, which outlined the deep concerns the VIUSU has regarding the administration's leadership decisions around the encampment. The letter also urged the provincial authorities to direct VIU to reverse the campus lockdown measures and encourage VIU's Board of Governors to review the actions taken and make sure decisions are made transparently and with full stakeholder involvement. The chairperson also asked for assurance that VIU will provide the Students' Union with ongoing communication. Bowen says about a year and a half ago, the Students' Union had stopped receiving community updates from the university's external relations department. This has led the VIUSU being in the dark about measures VIU has taken regarding the encampment.
All of the community updates that a student or a staff member of the university would get, we've had to get secondhand from either students on our board or staff of the university who we work closely with. So not only did we not get informed beforehand, we didn't get informed with the rest of the community. We had to find out secondhand.
On May 7th, VIU announced it will be lifting the measures in place and changing the library hours to what they call regular summer hours. On May 16th, VIUSU's legal counsel sent a letter to VIU President Deborah Swossier, Minister of Post-Secondary and Future Skills Lisa Baer, and the VIU student body. The letter states that while VIU has engaged with those at the encampment and eased restrictions, VIUSU is still concerned about the precedent created by VIU's initial response to the start of the encampment. The letter requests VIU's Board of Governors to start a full investigation into the response from the university and requests a public acknowledgement of how, quote, the initial mishandling of the encampment detrimentally affected students and freedom of expression on campus more generally, end quote. These actions from occurring again. In conclusion, the letter notes, quote, the threat of discipline and surveillance of and restrictions on movement on campus in response to a peaceful protest sends a clear signal to the VIU community that political speech is not welcome, end quote. Bowen says since the letter has been sent, he has had conversations with the Ministry of Post-Secondary and Future Skills and members of the Board of Governors, but VIUSU has not received any formal response from Vancouver Island University. For now, Bowen says VIUSU is reaching out to other student unions for support and will continue to reach out to VIU's senior administration and the Board of Governors.
And we want the university to acknowledge that they shouldn't have locked down the campus, given that they kept communicating that campus was calm and safe.
He also says the Students' Union wants to see the university come together in a good faith discussion with the VIU Palestine Solidarity Encampment. This would mean VIU to hire a mediator to get both groups to the table.
And what I believe needs to be done is that they need to hire a mediator to get them both to the table, and I believe that responsibility falls on the university.
Going to its first full month, for now the student encampment continues to stand in solidarity with Palestinians at VIU's Nanaimo campus. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you.
This is a CHY News update. Those who have found barriers due to their disability in the workforce or assessing services can now share their thoughts with the provincial government. Starting today, May 31st, the BC government is inviting people with disabilities to share the restrictions they may have faced from equal participation when in the workforce or assessing services. This comes as the Provincial Accessibility Committee proposes accessibility standard recommendations. The accessibility standards are guidelines that support the removal of barriers for people with disabilities and can later be adopted into regulations. For employment accessibility standards, they support employers in creating an inclusive workplace and aim to support businesses and organizations in removing barriers some may face when assessing their goods or services. The province says these standards mark an important step in making BC an inclusive place for everyone. CHY attended the announcement on May 30th with MLA for Nanaimo and Minister of Social Development and Poverty Reduction, Sheila Malcolmson, and Parliamentary Secretary for Accessibility, Susie Chant. The announcement took place at the opening of the Inclusion BC Conference in downtown Nanaimo. Malcolmson, who will be attending the three-day conference, says the provincial government learns a lot when the community comes together and voices their opinions about what barriers exist and how they can be removed. Afterwards, Chan came on the stage to announce to the crowd the public engagement on accessibility standards.
We are opening public engagement to learn about these standards from the perspectives of people all around BC. We've had a lot of wisdom in building those standards. Now we want to hear from all of you on what they look like to you.
The public engagement will take place from May 31st to July 31st. Chan says people can participate through their online engagement website and virtual town halls that will happen throughout June. The virtual town hall for the Vancouver Island and Coastal Region will take place on June 11th, starting at 9 a.m.
And we encourage all of you here in the room to provide your input and spread the word, because every input matters. If we can hit 10,000, I will be doing not pirouettes, but a happy dance of some sort.
Chant says organizations can host small community-led sessions to hear from people in their communities. To support the work, the Ministry of Social Development and Poverty Reduction is providing grants up to $2,500 for organizations to host the sessions. These type of organizations are listed on the ministry's website as Indigenous organizations and partners, community organizations, or organizations representing an equity group. After the announcement in a media scrum, CHY spoke with Malcolmson and Chant. Malcolmson says they'll be using the input they received to hear from lived experiences when implementing accessibility legislation.
For the next 2 months, we want people from across British Columbia, that's employers, that's service providers, and of course anybody that's experienced any kind of disability, to let us know whether our advisory committee hit the mark, and we'll build the standards and then the regulation for how it is that we implement our accessibility legislation.
When asked about any concerns they had come up during the process, Chan says that accessibility is a spectrum.
And so we've got visible disabilities and we've got invisible disabilities, and there had to be a lot of consideration made to that. That when we first started out, everybody brought their expertise to the table and was very, you know, vigilant to ensure that their disability was well represented at the table. And then as time progressed, we realized that there were certain principles that we needed to recognize and speak to.
Minister Malcolmson says through the development of the standards, they are narrowing down what might prevent someone from getting a job or doing well at that job.
So an example we heard through the pre-consultation process was the training offered to me, my boss spoke too quickly and I couldn't understand any instructions. So if we, by developing an employment standard in this area, we're giving employers the guidance, speak more slowly, find ways to accommodate that worker, written instructions.
The ministry says after the input stage, between August and December of this year, the Provincial Accessibility Committee will review the feedback and produce a report from it. Next year, the recommendations will then be submitted to the Ministry of Social Development and Poverty Reduction, who will bring them to Cabinet for consideration before regulations are developed. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Crispy falafel with creamy tahini. Savory black bean burritos with Mexican rice and guacamole. Butternut squash ravioli tossed with sage and roasted hazelnuts. This list of rich, flavorful plant-based meals could go on and on. But many restaurants have few vegetarian options, and descriptions of those entrees often focus on what the meals lack instead of what they're made of.
They're talking about what is not in the meal. So think about vegan or meatless or even dairy-free.
Eve Turow-Paul of the nonprofit Food for Climate League says shifting to more plant-rich diets helps limit global warming because producing meat and dairy creates a lot of climate pollution. So her group created a guide to help chefs write mouth-watering descriptions of their vegan and vegetarian entrees. She says it's important to focus on ingredients and highlight the spices, sauces, and cooking methods that make each dish special.
How do you really lift up the things that are most likely to get people craving that dish?
The same principle applies when cooking for friends and family. By emphasizing what makes a meal delicious instead of what's not on the plate, you can help get people hungry for food that's good for the climate. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Did you know that BC's natural ecosystem is one of the most biologically diverse regions in Canada? Indigenous communities have stewarded these lands for millennia and maintained a significant relationship with the natural world. Many of their practices, such as sustainable resource management and knowledge of ecological environments, continues to shape conservation efforts in this province. Come to the next Science World Spotlight on Wednesday, June 19th, between 6 and 9:30 p.m. for a thought-provoking panel discussion on the connections between Indigenous worldviews and contemporary environmental challenges. Head over to Science World's website to find out more.